Welcome, podcast aficionados, one and all, to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. My name is Mike Quackenbush. Clayton Morris is with me, as ever, on the program here on The Grizz, as the kids are calling it down on the street corners. We talk about whatever we want. In addition to that, we're going to thank our great show sponsors, and we might even give away something awesome. All that and a whole lot more awaits you here at the cafe. Dear Mr. Morris, how was the Southern Hemisphere?
It was great. Just returned from New Zealand. And I think the weirdest thing about this trip, I mean, first of all, it was beautiful there. The people are very, very pleasant. You know, even the people like at the airport, at, they were like overly pleasant, which is just such a turn. You know, like the people helping you through, like typical for our TSA, but their security, incredibly nice. So beautiful country, of course, home of the Lord of the Rings movies and the Hobbit. So beautiful countryside. And we got to see a lot of those shooting locations, which was great. I was just surprised at how weird the time shift was, you know? So when I left, I flew out on a Monday and I arrived there on a Wednesday. So for me, Tuesday didn't exist. Tuesday, February 5th did not exist for me. And I landed and it was February 6th. So gone was February 5th. Like if I was keeping a journal, which I have taken to do lately, there's a missing day. Then when I returned, they're like, well, you know, you get that day back. Well, no, that's a lie. You don't get that day back.
Yeah, I think that defies physics.
Right. You get a really long day back. So I was leaving on a Monday morning, but it was still Sunday where I was headed. So it was Monday for me, but it was still Sunday on the west coast of California. And so I left on a Monday, and I returned and arrived on a Monday. So yesterday was the longest day of my life. I've never had a longer day, and it was quite bizarre. And when
how
I was
many total hours did this day contain?
Well, let's see. I left on Monday their time at 2:30 in the afternoon. Monday afternoon at 2:30, and I arrived at 10 a.m. California time. Monday. So that flight was a total, I think, of 16 hours. So we were chasing the sun the whole time. So they, you know, put the shades down if you want to get some sleep. So we were basically chasing the sunrise the entire way across. And so when we landed, you know, it was already, the sun was up. And then, of course, I spent the whole day, all day Monday. So all told, I think, let's see, if it's 16 hours, it was probably somewhere upwards of like 30, maybe like 36 hours. Something like that. That was the length of my day.
That is an exceptionally long day.
Can you imagine if every day was that? I would get so much done.
Right. Yeah. I could sleep so much more.
Well, what was it like when you went to Japan?
I had a day like that coming back, much like you did. It obviously wasn't quite as severe because New Zealand's even further than Japan. But it was the worst case of jet lag I've ever had in my life. Like, I really felt like I spent the next 2 weeks trying to get over that jet lag. It was horrible. You know, like after the third or fourth, you know, trip to Europe, which, you know, going to continental Europe would usually be a 6 or 7 hour flight. It was like nothing. You know, I didn't bat an eyelash at that. But Japan, whoa, that one wrecked me.
Surprisingly, I'm doing surprisingly well, actually. I just stayed away. I took a little nap in the afternoon yesterday and, you know, woke up as normal this morning, at like 7:30, 8 o'clock this morning. And, you know, I'm feeling fine. I'll go to bed like at normal time tonight. And I don't know how jet lag shows itself. Like, does it show itself as just yawning all the time? Or does it show itself as being sort of out of sorts? Because I don't really feel either right now. And I know, you know, traveling to Europe, Germany and stuff, I felt a little out of sorts when I came back on a Friday. I felt a little tired. Like, oh, it's 7 p.m. We should be in bed right now, you know. But we stayed up. So... But this time, I don't have any of that. I don't know why.
I think usually the way it manifests itself, you might remember this from Scooby-Doo, where you're walking along and your shadow is kind of cast behind you, and then all of a sudden your shadow's doing something different from you. And then you turn around to see, like, hey, did I see that? And then it acts like it wasn't doing it. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Did you find, you know, I had all these things planned for the flight. And then you get in that flight, you get in the aircraft, and all of that goes out the window, right? I'm just like, well, I had all of these movies downloaded. I had a bunch of books. And I did, you know, I did some reading. I did some quality reading of a new history book I was reading. And I had all of these other ideas as to what I was going to do with my time. and I did none of them. I ended up just watching almost the entire season 7 of Dexter.
Oh.
Which was highly entertaining. But other than that...
Is this the last season?
No, this was... Well, this was last, if you mean by last, as in...
The final. The
final? No, it's... No, because they're doing another one, as far as I know. I think season 8 is about to happen.
Okay.
I think they did a preview at Comic-Con or somewhere in the fall, maybe, at in New York. I don't know. But I know that this season 7 just wrapped up, maybe in the fall, before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this is a pretty interesting season. What did you finish? Were you up to 6 or 5?
You know, I can't really remember. It was a while ago that I finished. Well, I haven't seen Dexter in quite a while. So maybe it was just the 5th one. I feel like that Jordan Chase one was the last one that I watched.
Okay, then that was, 2 seasons ago. Because last season had Colin Hanks.
Hanks. I haven't seen that.
And what's his name? Who played the captain in Battlestar? The lead.
Adama?
Adama. Yeah, Edward James Olmos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's those two. Colin Hanks and Edward James Olmos as the bad guys. It was quite good. But this season is pretty interesting because quite a turn takes place. So I ended up just watching most of Dexter. I watched 7 episodes of Dexter, and I downloaded that David Grohl documentary that he directed.
Oh, yes. Did you watch it?
I did not. I just didn't get. I just kept. I was like, I just kept going with. I rented it on my iPad, and it's still sitting there as a. What do you get? 30 days, I think, to watch it. 30-day rental.
I've never rented anything on my iPad.
I think it's 30 days, and then once you start watching it, you have 24 hours to complete it. But I think you have 30 days to watch it. So. I downloaded that for $4 and I still haven't watched it. And the reviews are 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's supposed to be excellent about the history of this particular sound studio. And I know one of our listeners had commented that they had watched it. So I didn't get to watch that. I read a little, had some magazines. I downloaded a bunch of comics, a bunch of Justice League comics, a bunch of Batman stuff. I just didn't get to any
of it. Was it modern stuff or New 52 stuff?
Yeah, New 52 stuff.
I've heard through the grapevine that there's a major shakeup coming at DC as
really?
It relates to the New 52, because it is, as we knew all along, it's underperforming in terms of the sales. And I would not be surprised. Apparently, there's a huge company-wide retreat that's being called. Maybe it's even this weekend to discuss this. And here's what I think. I don't work in their offices. I don't really hear any inside gossip about any of this stuff. But here's what I think. In less than 18 months, they will fold the New 52 universe back into the traditional DC universe. And this will be like that Heroes Reborn thing that Rob Liefeld and the Image guys did at Marvel for a year. Remember where the Avengers and the Fantastic Four left the main continuity and went to some other universe where they were drawn incorrectly in terms of how anatomy works? And then they came back and it was oops! We didn't really mean any of that because, it was crappy.
That's going to really chap my behind because, I mean, they said, they said point blank, look, we're starting fresh, right? This is a new direction for us. And didn't they even say this is not going to be some short-lived thing?
Of course they're going to say that, when they killed Superman, they came out and said, this is not a publicity stunt. Of course it was. They're just, they can't say that publicly because they're undermining what they're trying to do, You remember that, when that outrage happened over them killing Superman or the assassination of Captain America, right? It was the front page of USA Today.
Right.
Or even more recently, right? How Amazing Spider-Man 700 came out a month ago.
Right.
And the day it came out, death threats were being sent to Dan Slott, the writer from Amazing Spider-Man. Of course he's not going to come out and be like, Spidey's going to be back in 10 issues, right?
Right.
They can't come out and say that. If they come out and say, hey, this New 52 thing we're doing where we want you to buy all these new comics, in a year or two, it's not going to matter. No one's going to buy them.
Yeah.
They have to stick to their guns. But I'm not the least bit surprised to hear this.
Why do you think it underperformed? Let's get to the heart of this. Because I found some of the stories to be compelling and interesting. Mm-hmm. It was certainly an easy way for me to get back into them. Maybe it drove away. I don't buy that it drove away current subscribers. Do you?
Well, I think you're hitting on the crux of it. I want to say this about this, that the idea behind something like the New 52 or Marvel Now, which is going on where they're canceling all the old titles again, relaunching them from number one, like Amazing Spider-Man, right? It was just canceled. Number 700 was the last one. And I hope I'm not spoiling anything for you. But at the end, Dr. Octopus and Spider-Man switch bodies because Dr. Octopus is dying. So Otto Octavius is now in Spider-Man's body. He moved Peter Parker into his body, and then he died. And that's it. That's how they killed Peter Parker. So Otto Octavius is now Spider-Man. And, you know, there's been a big hoopla about this new series that's coming, Superior Spider-Man. All these kinds of things, I think, when they press the reset button. And I use that term, I think everyone understands what I mean by that, but that term used to come up a lot in the 90s in professional wrestling. When a writer, who I think is perhaps maybe the most infamous and one of the worst writers in the history of professional wrestling, which is just a type of serialized fictional narrative, Vince Russo, would come into like a company like WCW after he left Vince McMahon's employ, and rather than trying to fix everything that was wrong to make the product better, he would, as it was called, push the reset button. Like, there'd be an episode where, like, the whole company would come out, and, like, they'd have a new company logo, and they'd all say, like, yeah, you know, all that stuff that happened before, forget about it, because today is the start of the new WCW, and everything that had gone before was just erased. And you're like, what? Like, how the heck did this happen? And that's what this is like in comic books, yeah. You know, with Marvel Now or the New 52. And they do it for this reason, I have to believe. Not just because it's a publicity ploy, but the problem is you can't attract new readers to comic books. And that's an issue in and of itself, right? Is it the price? When you and I were – do you remember the first comic book you bought for yourself that wasn't a gift or something like that? What was the cover price?
I think it was either 50 cents or 75. I'm pretty sure 75 sounded about right to me.
Right. Me too. A 75-cent comic book was the first one I ever bought for myself. I was gifted comics that had cover prices of 60 cents and 50 cents.
But right.
The first one I ever bought for myself was 75 cents. And it wasn't too long after that it went to a dollar, which seemed huge at the time, right?
Right.
When the books went to a dollar, and then how well do you remember this? You remember there were books, like there was a Teen Titans book at DC that was considered Baxter printing. There were some that were printed on a special kind of paper, and they were like $1.50.
Right.
And I just thought, I'll never spend $1.50 on a comic book.
Right. Then a few years later, we're spending $3.50, $4.75.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think the going price now, one of the companies is $4.99, the other is $3.99 is their average price, right? I'm not sure which is Marvel and which is DC, but... So you have an intimidating cover price, right? Because for you and me, like, to spend 75 cents on an issue of The New Mutants, and then, I didn't really like it. Well, it was only 75 cents. But for 75 cents, for example, maybe you'd pick up an issue of Speedball and be like, you know, I don't think I'm going to say anything out loud, but I really like Speedball.
Right. I didn't have a problem being vocal about my love of Speedball, by the way.
No. No, Yeah, you and me, we'll be back-to-back fighting off a room of comic nerds about Speedball. I'll still go to bat for Speedball. Steve Ditko, you're so wacky. But anyway, you know, nowadays, would you take $5 out of your pocket to try a book like that? Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't. And how would a kid do that, you know? Yeah. Like, I mean, unless the kid's dealing drugs or whatever, just got hot on the lottery. Like, how's a kid affording $5 to take a risk on something like that? And especially when there's so much other media that's immediately accessible, right? Like, you could probably watch any episode of, like, Justice League Unlimited on YouTube, or you could rent it, right? You just got them for your iPad, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right? I just downloaded them for my iPad to the issues, yeah.
There's more passive ways of getting your entertainment that kind of, you know, inform kids today. I think they're more likely to want to play those characters in a video game or download the content than read a paper book or something like that. Incidentally, have you started watching any Justice League Unlimited?
Yeah, we've watched, my son and I have watched like the first two or three episodes where Green Arrow joins the group reluctantly.
Yeah, Batman kind of talks him into it.
Yeah, we watched that. We watched another episode where they become miniaturized, or they mm-hmm. actually get turned into 8-year-olds. So you have like 8-year-old Batman, 8-year-old Superman, 8-year-old Wonder Woman.
Right. The demon Etrigan is in that, right?
Right, right. And they have the mm-hmm. kids. They have kids actually doing the voices. So it's not mm-hmm. like some, you know, computerized thing. They have like kids actually doing the voices for those characters. It's pretty funny. No, but yeah, my son loves it. But you know, it's hard because we got to try to watch how much fighting is going on. When he's fighting a robot, that seems to be okay. But when they're
right,
you know, doing other sort of hand to hand stuff, then we're kind of like, we shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, there are a couple really violent episodes with like fist fights. Like I quick had to turn one off because I was watching one with Elliot where Superman and Captain Marvel start fighting, And there's one scene where, like, Superman just punches Captain Marvel in the face, like, 10 times in a row. Like, he just pins him down and just, like, wails on him in the face. And I was like, well, we're going to turn this off here real quick. But that season you're watching, it develops into something really awesome. It really is very, very good. Like, you know how sometimes you start watching an animated series and you're like, you know, I'm a dude in my 30s. I don't really know if I should be watching. Like, oh, man, it's so good. It's not like when you go back and watch, like, Transformers Season 1 from 84, and you're like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever watched. Why did I like this as a kid? But to get back to the matter at hand, so you can't attract the new readers, maybe because of the price point, or this is what I think the editors think. It's inaccessible. How do you start reading Amazing Spider-Man at issue 699? Right? Like, oops, there's only 50-plus years of continuity I got to get caught up on. Like, they think it's too intimidating for new readers. So you have that, you know, on the one side of the equation. And then the other side of the equation are people like you and I. We started reading the comic books 30 years ago. We grew up with all that, right? It wasn't too intimidating to go back and read the key issues from, like, Amazing, right? You could go back and read that issue where he throws the costume away, or the Gwen Stacy death one, or the one about drugs where they didn't have the comic code. You could go back and read those, or you found them in collected works so that you could read all the really important milestones, and then you just picked it up, right? Like, do you remember the first issue of Spider-Man you bought off the rack? Like, what was it?
That's tough. Off the rack, it may have been a Web of Spider-Man issue. It might not even been an Amazing Spider-Man. I need to get my comic boxes out of my parents' house, but I think early on, I think it might have been like a Web of Spider-Man or Spectacular Spider-Man, one of those.
Yeah. My first one was Amazing 252, which is the one where he returns from Secret Wars with the black costume.
Yeah.
I bought that one.
I don't recall it as crystal clearly as you do, but I know I had that one. So right in that same era, I'm sure.
Right. So, you know, if you know, previous to that, there were maybe like 30 or 40 really landmark Spider-Man stories. To go back, and especially because they always referenced them, like there'd be an asterisk in one of the word balloons if Spider-Man, you know, alluded to something. And then there'd be, you know, down at the bottom of the panel, there'd be a caption from the editor, like, don't know what he's talking about? Go back and read Amazing Spider-Man 241. And to me, that was like the fun of it. You'd go back and rediscover all these old stories one by one that were relevant to what you were reading now. But as the characters age, you know, Amazing Spider-Man reached issue 700, I have to think that they just felt like they were being crushed under the weight of the continuity. So to us, the guys that grew up reading that continuity, the moment you erase that, you've disengaged me from that character. The moment you say, yeah, everything that's come before, we just erased it. Now I don't care. Like, I'm not going to pick up Superior Spider-Man number one and start reading again from there. Right. You know, like, you ended the character that I loved, and now someone else is going to reinvent him, right? Like, now Peter Parker's a blogger because that's current. Like, that sort of thing to me is so odious. Yeah. And so you're losing, you know, the older readers who don't want to read this because you've disengaged them, right? You've sort of ruined the continuity of the character that they grew up loving and could relate to. Or, you know, think about where we are, right? Like, in terms of physical space, like, I can't store any more comic books.
Right.
You know, I can't buy them anymore. Even if I had the budget to do it, which I now give to the Starbucks Corporation, I couldn't afford the books. And then how do you attract new readers? So I think trapped by these two circumstances is what gives us the New 52 and Marvel Now and other publicity stunts like this, where the editorship really reaches out and pushes the reset button and hopes that the publicity attracts some new readers.
Right, and you have the rise of the graphic novels, so people wait like me. I think you and me perhaps would probably go and pick up, you know, Flash Rebirth and these other graphic novels and read those because we just don't have the time or the bandwidth to want to go out and, you know, shell out four or five dollars an issue and store it in these, you know, long boxes in our house. It's not something we want to do. And, you know, I always come back to my thing with Best Buy, right? You go into Best Buy now, and you're even starting to see the DVD shelves being shortened. Mm-hmm. You know, because I know I'm. You know, it's going to happen. It's going to happen in the next few years where DVDs are gone. It's like physical media is probably going to be relegated to specialty shops. You know, I don't know that comic books will go that way. I'm sure that, you know, the idea of having that physical media and having kids be able to hold a comic book in their hand is still going to be relevant. But I wonder how profitable it'll be. And you know, you may find that it's not going to be profitable anymore for Marvel Comics. For them right now, I bet you it's a loss leader.
The print comics absolutely are.
I mean, I have to imagine, and I'm sure, you know, we can get into some discussion at some point with some indie comics creators about this, because I'm fascinated by that. Whether or not, you know, it wouldn't be a loss leader if you can keep the costs down to a point that's manageable where you are, maybe it's direct by mail. Mm-hmm. You're producing it on a subscription basis, so you know exactly how many people are purchasing your comic, and therefore you can expand to meet that expanding audience. But you're not just printing willy-nilly, hoping that somebody goes into a Rite Aid pharmacy and picks up your comics. That to me seems like a dying business model. So for Marvel Entertainment, which is making millions and millions and, you know, billions of dollars on movies and theme park stuff and licensing and all of that, I bet, you know, like what I just said, the print comic book edition has got to be a loss leader for them.
Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely certain it is. And I'll take the opposite side of this. I think it's just a matter of time before the print comic book disappears. Sooner or later, someone who's is going to end up in a position of power at one of the major publishers and say, you know, that who are we making this for, this print book anymore? You know, it is a loss leader. You know, the major revenue, I think, that, you know, Marvel sees and Warner Brothers, who owns DC, sees, they all come from the licensing, right? They come from movies, TV shows, action figures, amusement park deals, all the licensing that's out there.
Yeah.
And it's going to eventually, someone who views that as being like an anachronism or a relic from a bygone era is just going to say, and today is the last day we make print comic books. And from now on, it's going to exist in the digital sphere only. And I feel like that's only a few years away.
God, it's going to be such a sad day. Mm-hmm. A sad day. We'll have more on this discussion in a moment. But first, why don't we thank one of our show sponsors? I want to get into discussion, and we'll throw this out there as a tease. What does it mean to be a supervillain and or a superhero? Must you have supernatural powers or some kind of superpower to be considered one of these things? And we were in a little bit of a debate about this the other day. So
who,
I'm gonna get
it. Who was debating this?
My wife and I.
I see. Do you want to get her on the line?
We were having a discussion. Actually, she was having a discussion with a longtime listener of this show about that very issue. When he asked the very question, I think he's a customs and border agent guard here in San Francisco, and a very nice guy, fan of the Grizz and some of the other of our shows. Hello to you, sir. It's always great seeing you. He said that he asked the question, I think, of my son, is Indiana Jones a superhero? So that prompted the whole debate. We'll get into that in just a second, but why don't you tell us a little bit about the delicious, the fantastic folks over at Tonks Coffee.
I will. Hey, I don't know, by the way, did you have a chance to listen to that episode of the New Disruptors podcast where they talk to the guy they call Tonks behind right. Tonks Coffee?
Nick Bauman, yeah.
It is, well, actually, there's a different guy. That's not the guy I'm thinking
of. Oh, okay.
Like his name actually sounds like the word Tonks.
Oh, I thought it was Nick on the show. I'm friends
with two.
Yeah.
There's two guys on the show. Yeah. One is sort of the founder, one's like the marketing guru. But it's fascinating. And the thing that really comes through as I was listening to this this podcast, which I know we talked about a week or so ago, the New Disruptors, was how passionate these guys are about the coffee. And at the end of the day, you know, as consumers, we vote with our dollars, right? I would rather be giving my money to somebody who I know is really passionate about what it is that they create, the product that they put out there into the world, as opposed to someone who's like kind of crassly going about doing it as a profiteer. And one thing that really comes through is the extraordinary lengths that the gang over at Tonks, you can look them up online at Tonks, TONX.org, not com or net, but org, to find out a little bit about what they do. And they're really committed to, they're very conscientious about the way they go about appropriating these beans. They actually go out, you know, they meet with the farmers themselves, which is remarkable, right? They go all over the world, you know, trying to find where, okay, at this time of year, we're able to get beans from this source, or at this time of year, we're able to get them from that source, and who's going to be able to meet our needs in terms of, you know, the people that we have to deliver to every single month, and can we assure that they're going to be sealed immediately after being picked so that the freshness is the way we want them to be, because they are really, really committed to that above all. And you'll hear them talk a little bit in this podcast, or maybe you even know about the way in which the beans can become rancid or bitter sitting around if they aren't, you know, kind of sealed up immediately and delivered as promptly as possible. You don't want to buy them off the shelf at the grocery store where they've been sitting out for weeks and weeks, because you're really not getting the best possible coffee out of these beans. Well, Tonks.org is out there to resolve exactly this. And you can listen to them talk about it. You can read what's on their website. You can listen to me, you know, evangelize on their behalf about what a fantastic job and how conscientiously they go about doing this. And the role that they really play in the world economy and everything else. But you know what it really boils down to? What that cup of coffee tastes like. So if you want to find out what it's all about, go over to Tonks.org and sign up for the free trial to become a potential new Tonksian over there, and they're going to send you a bag of the beans for free. And the proof, as they say, is in the pudding, because both Clayton and I have ended up getting bags of beans from the guys over at Tonks. And believe me, if you're thinking, you know, I'm just going to get the free bag and then I'll end up canceling, wait until you've had that free bag before you make up your mind. And exactly. You might be surprised all of a sudden how you become a little home barista.
Right.
If you do want to check that out, incidentally, I can't recommend it strongly enough. Look them up online. The New Disruptors is the name of the podcast. I think it was the fourth or fifth episode has the gang from Tonks on, just talking about how it's all come together and what their mission is and everything else. It's a really fascinating story. Even if they didn't happen to deliver to me some awesome coffee beans every single, well, it's less than a month, actually. You can get them every couple of weeks if you want.
Right.
It's fascinating. Fascinating to listen to. We couldn't make this show and others like it on the Grizzly Productions Network without our friends at Tonks Coffee. It's the sponsors that keep us alive. And as it relates to that, we need your help. We need you to help us spread the gospel about Tonks. And if you're willing to do this for us, I understand that my pal Clayton Morris might give you a tablet device.
That's right. In fact, some of our listeners have already signed up for their free trial of Tonks, and we're going to give away a Google Nexus 7 tablet. We're going to pick them at random for anyone who signs up for Tonks. So Alex Lopez signed up, and all you need to do is sign up over at Tonks.org, T-O-N-X.org. Sign up for your free trial. They'll ship you the beans. And you can continue on. You put in your credit card info, and you can continue on to get them shipped either every 2 weeks or every month. We signed up for the two-week plan, mm-hmm. My wife and I, because I drink a lot of good coffee. And all you need to do is send out a tweet, like Alex Lopez did, to Grizzly Bear Cafe. He just said, hey, at Grizzly Bear Cafe, Tonks, at Tonks Coffee, just signed up for the free Tonks Coffee trial thanks to the guys at the Grizz. And he linked right to it. That's all you need to do. Mm-hmm. And then what we are going to do is go through all of those tweets, and we're going to pick one of you guys at random, and you're going to win a Google Nexus 7 tablet. It's that simple. So, Alex Lopez, thank you for signing up for your free coffee. Eric Hofstetter did as well. We need to get John Bolin on it. He's been tweeting us. We need to get him on that. Joey Snackpants is a fan. He's been listening on Twitter. Jason Kirk just signed up for his free trial. He said, hey, just signed up for my free trial of at Tonks Coffee. Can't wait for my first cup and maybe win a Nexus 7. Thank you so much, Jason. And everyone else who's signed up, we really appreciate it. And we're going to announce the winner next week. So after next week's show, no, we have 4 weeks to do it. And then we're going to announce it on the fifth week who won the Nexus 7 tablet. And we will send it to you free of charge. It's free to enter. Why not try it? It's that simple. Some feedback here on Twitter. Chad Ingles writes us, the Egghead Army is expecting 24/7 commentary in the East Coast blizzard from Clayton and Mike. Did you get hit pretty hard with that, by the way?
No, it missed me by and large. I had about an inch on the ground.
Yeah, they got like over a foot up in Boston. Maybe even more than that. Alex Holt Cohen writes us, hey, Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, I know you guys like 60s Batman, and these were in Penn Station, and he took a photo. Did you see these? They're cufflinks of the 60s Batmobile. I want these cufflinks, and I need to find them. I think I know what store he's talking about in Penn Station. It's like there's like a tie store. They have a 60s Batmobile cufflinks. Those are the coolest thing ever. Thanks, Alex, for sending that in.
Hey, related to that, by the way, you know, there is a slew of 60s Batman merchandise coming this year, right?
Yes. I think I may have sent you, I don't know if you got my email or not, from New Zealand, because I saw that. Someone sent out, the licensing was just approved, or not the licensing, but the lineup of the figures and all of the stuff for the 60s Batman was just approved and confirmed, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they've got a 60s Batmobile replica that's coming out. There's going to be it looks like it's going to be two waves of action figures. The first wave is it looks like it's Batman, Robin, Joker, Penguin, and Catwoman. And I believe that there's a second wave in the works as well. It would seem likely that you're going to get a Batgirl and things like that. So, but more and more of that stuff is finally rolling out because after all these years, they finally resolved the licensing issue.
Nice. Yeah, so now that, I guess the final question is, do we know when the DVDs will be out for 60s Batman?
I haven't heard that anywhere yet.
AB Summer was thrilled with our 80s list of songs. Do you have a transcript of that episode? The episode Come Over and Smack My Hand. That was our last episode of The Grizz. No, we don't have a transcript of it because we're too lazy. But we will, however. I have been compiling, actually, that 80s list that you and I created. And maybe, you know what I'll do is I'll create like a little list and we'll tweet it out in the next few days. But I've been working on that 80s list, and I actually listened to some of it on my flight to New Zealand. And it was quite a good list that you and I compiled.
Right, yeah. Afterwards, I was thinking like, we left the Cars off. Like, there were a couple other ones we really should have put in there.
But. Well, it's funny. I went through and I was adding that as I was building the list because I was scrolling through my iTunes Match stuff, and I was like, oh, Cars. We forgot Cars. And it just would add in, you know, Hello, Goodbye. I mean, Hello Again.
That's a really good one.
Stuck that in there and some other ones, you know, as I was going through. I'm like, oh, we forgot that. We forgot that. So, incidentally, we were doing some 80s trivia on the bus at one point while we were driving along in New Zealand and taking photos. Trey, buddy's a big 80s fan, so he just popped on his iPod. He's like, we're going to do a little 80s trivia. And for like 3 hours, he was playing some random good stuff. You know, there's some stuff that he was playing that I was like, I thought he had my iPod at first. But then there was some stuff that popped up, which I had never really thought to buy, and I don't own any of it, like The Pretenders.
I really like Don't Get Me Wrong by The Pretenders.
Yeah, that's a pretty famous song, of course, of theirs. But he played a different one, which was really good, and I was like, ooh, this has a nice little funky groove to it, and I need to check out some Pretenders stuff. He also was playing some good stuff like Modern English. I don't have a lot of Modern English.
Right.
What else did he have in there? You know, some good Janet Jackson stuff, actually. Mm-hmm. He had some imports, like some really interesting imports. He had some really cool duets, like a live performance of Michael McDonald and I think it's Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins. Have you ever heard that? Their duet, which I guess is not just a live performance. Maybe it is I forget the name of the song. They sort of slow it down in this live performance that they did. So anyway, good stuff.
I did have this weird I may have told this story once before, but I was working a wrestling show up in the Poconos back in the 90s, and it was late one night, and this like commercial came on for like this CD collection of like soft rock hits. It went something like this, the commercial. Mystic Music presents on 2 CDs or 7 cassette tapes. Cool rock. And I'm watching this, and it's like 3 a.m., and I should have been asleep, but I was still, you know, I'm up, I'm wired. My adrenaline was going from earlier in the night from wrestling, and I'm still awake. And I'm like, I want that CD. And I picked up the phone, and I called, and I ordered it. And then, you know, a couple of weeks go by, and I forgot, because it was like 3 in the morning, and I was tired. And, like, the CD comes to my house, and I was like, what is this? And I was like, oh, my God, I must have ordered this that night. And
to get to your house, by the way. When you ordered those, it'd be like months would go by, and you'd be like, did I really order greatest television songs of the 80s?
Oh, my God. You know I have every one of those CDs, too. Every TV theme song CD, I have them all. Yeah, you know, at the end there, they'd just be like, no COD, allow 18 to 24 months for delivery. And you're like, what? How long did they just say?
But you're half awake. It's 3 in the morning.
Right. Like, why did I pay $39.95 for shipping if it takes 2 years to get to me? So, yeah, it shows up, and I'm looking through the liner notes, and no joke, more than 50% of the songs had Michael McDonald as like a backing vocalist. Like, he's not the lead guy on any of them, but like he was backing up Kenny Loggins on a song. He's, you know, backing up Steely Dan. He's backing up Toto. You know, he's backing up Stevie Nicks. Michael McDonald was like on every other track on this CD. So the fact that you brought that up, I was just thinking about that. Like,
well, I think this is the live version. Listen to this. This is the song that he had. And of course, this is, we know this song, but this is the live version of. See if you can spot this. Let's see if this plays with it. Here it's a little live version. Let's see if you can pick this out here. Wow, they look.
Once in her lap, she must have a smile. What is the stealth you take?
Do you recognize it yet?
It's a Doobie Brothers song. It's What a Fool Believes.
Right.
Yeah.
They co-wrote this song, you know, though. Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They did a whole like little concert set together here. Yeah, so it was cool. He had a bunch of cool live stuff like that.
That song, you know, I think I might have even sent it to you after I got it. Matt Bianco, who sort of fell into our sphere during our Sophistopop run here on the podcast,
right.
They cover that song. And listening to Matt Bianco, which is the name of a band, there's no person called that. Whoever that lead singer was, that's the first I really understood the lyrics. Because there's something about Michael McDonald's falsetto
right.
where, like, I know he's speaking English, but I really don't know. And you're like, what?
Have you ever seen...
What was that?
Have you... what's her
Did
name?
Did you like that? I was practicing that before I came on the podcast.
Here it is. Have you ever seen...
I just sang the Bill of Rights to you, the U.S. Bill of Rights.
I wouldn't understand it. And that's the thing with Michael McDonald. You really can't. And then that guy who won American Idol, who's like, and you can't really understand it. Do you ever see, and my wife turned me onto this clip, and I never saw it, this episode of 30 Rock with Jenna, who sings, who does, like, Michael McDonald can't make it for the performance. So she says...
Oh, yes. I do know what you're talking about.
So here it is. Listen to this. If you haven't caught this, here's the...
Entertainment?
Not just any entertainment, the best singer in the world, Michael McDonald.
But it's
like people like to bash him quite a bit. He was like the butt of the ongoing joke in the 40-year-old virgin and all kinds of stuff. But I don't mind saying it. Like, I like Michael McDonald's stuff.
Yeah.
I like it. Some of the guys at Chikara have taken to calling him and, like, Christopher Cross, who, speaking of a guy that, you know, sings backup vocal, Michael McDonald sings backup vocal on, like, three of Christopher Cross's best-known radio hits.
I was just going to say Christopher Cross, also another one of those guys, is the butt of many jokes.
Right. They call that the guys who apparently didn't know that was known as soft rock before the term adult contemporary came became in vogue. They call it yacht rock. Like like they would be wearing like a sailing cap on a yacht somewhere listening to Christopher Cross.
So that's our feed bag.
Hey, we are going to talk about superheroes in a second. Some updates for you on a variety of things. You know, Clayton and I have both watched more than a handful of episodes of the series on the CW, Arrow. Arrow, which is coming back for a full second season. They renewed it for a full order of episodes. They keep introducing more and more characters. And if you're a Green Arrow fan, then you know his longtime sidekick, Roy Harper, who was once called Speedy, and then I think he evolved into Arsenal because they thought that name was dumb, and then later became Red Arrow, which they kind of foreshadowed back in Kingdom Come, which was an outstanding limited series by Mark Waid and Alex Ross in the 90s. Roy Harper is going to show up on Arrow, I think, like this week. So they keep having more and more characters from Green Arrow's supporting cast show up, which is really cool that they're doing that, and they're trying to flesh out his universe a little bit because... As we've often talked about, people generally, you don't know Green Arrow's supporting cast the way that you know Superman or Batman. You know, like, this is the great question. Like, who's Green Arrow's archenemy? Like, I'm not really sure.
Right.
I don't really know who that is. So it's really interesting that they're doing that. And already they're starting to rev up. You know, this go-around this year has some incredible superhero movies that are due out, right? This year we're getting Iron Man 3. We're getting the new Thor movie. The Man of Steel is coming out, The Lone Ranger, and the season starts kind of early. March 29th, it starts with G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Yeah, we went to the movies. We went to the movies last night, so they had the big G.I. Joe poster up in the lobby. We went to see Django. Django Unchained last night, which was excellent, by the way. And yeah, saw the G.I. Joe Retaliation poster. And of course, then the lobby was filled with all the other superhero posters as well. And I couldn't believe, I said to my wife, I can't believe how quickly these movies are coming out, right? Like May. Yeah. I mean, of course, yeah, TV spot, G.I. Joe Retaliation is first. But then you've got like May hits with
Iron Man.
Iron Man, yeah.
Right. And speaking of, the reason I brought up G.I. Joe Retaliation is that is going to be the movie that has the first full-length look at the new Wolverine movie, which comes out, I think, at the end of summer.
No, I think it comes out in July. June is the next one then, which is Wolverine. So it goes May is Iron Man. June, I believe, is Wolverine. Then I think you have next on the list is Star Trek. Of import for me, and then you have Man of Steel, right? Is like in July.
Wow, I'm not even sure. I'll get that whole schedule up because that's the kind of stuff we talk about a whole lot here on the Grizz. But yeah, it is a summer chock full of them. They have no doubt about it, especially people who are roughly our age, which I would guess is who's attracted to this podcast anyway. Like, this is the golden age of superhero movies,
right?
Like, there was a time you'd go years and there was no movie about superheroes, you know. Like, Batman was such a success, like, oh, at least we got that Dolph Lundgren Punisher. There was a time when we thought that was good.
Right.
You know, because it'll be 3 years until there's another superhero movie, right? Because nobody counted Swamp Thing when they were making those. It'll be like 3 years until we get another superhero movie. Now it's like the summer. Every summer there's like six superhero movies. It's incredible. And because they smash box office records, right? I mean, how many superhero films are in the top 20 highest grossing films of all time now? Like, no wonder that they're getting fast-tracked. No wonder the studios are throwing all kinds of money at them because they bring it back. You know, they're huge box office successes. And even the ones that are not huge box office successes, like the Ghost Rider films, you know, still end up making money for the studios.
Right. Yeah, they really do. So you've got those films coming out. And which brought me to the question of what we were discussing, you know, in this next Superman film, of course, we have General Zod playing the antagonist instead of Lex Luthor this time around. And we had gotten to this discussion, or it was prompted, of course, by our listener about the question about Indiana Jones. And is Indiana Jones a superhero? To which I would naturally say no.
Right.
But then you get into this prickly area when you start to discuss the likes of Batman. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, he is, of course, the world's greatest detective, but he does not have any superpowers. Mm-hmm. But he is routinely regarded as the brains behind the operation at the Justice League, right? He's the one that keeps Superman in check, right? He's the one that has that thing of kryptonite hidden away in the Batcave somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. On just such an occasion where Superman goes rogue, you know, Batman is the brains of the operation, the ones calling the shots. He matched up against Superman, he's managed to outwit him a number of times. Now, in sheer brute force, of course, Superman would crush and kill Batman if he could, perhaps, unless he had kryptonite handy in his utility belt. But what is a superhero? And then again, what is a supervillain? Lex Luthor, right? Again, no superpowers, but he manages to bend the will of others to meet his purposes. So General Zod, of course, in Superman 2, while Lex Luthor wasn't the superior in strength, he manipulated Zod and the other members of his crew to work for him, basically. Mm-hmm. So how would you define that?
Well, that's a very good question. And, you know, this came up a long time ago when I was working on a book that'll never come out and will probably never be finished, which is about superhero film serials, television shows, and theatrical releases. And you and I had this discussion, maybe on a Grizz, maybe this predates the Grizz, because probably by the time we started this podcast, I'd all but given up on that project. I really stopped working on it in earnest in 2008. It was exactly that point. That if you're going to draw a line in the sand, and when you and I were having this discussion, the sticking point wasn't Indiana Jones, it was Tarzan. If we're going to say that these guys are superheroes and these guys aren't, like, what? How are we, you know, going to define that? You know, because to me, Tarzan is not.
Right.
Tarzan, Doc Savage, Dick Tracy, those kind of guys are not superheroes. But is Flash Gordon?
Is Archie?
Is the Phantom? Is Mandrake the Magician? Are those guys, right? These are all like pulp or news or comic strip characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you, where do you draw the line? Indiana Jones is another good example of that, right? Like, where does he fall? And we were having this discussion, you and I, about Tarzan in particular, because there are so many Tarzan films. And I was thinking about, do I really want to go through the trouble of adding 30 to 40 Tarzan films to this already ridiculously obese work that I was laboring on? And I really didn't want to. I hate Tarzan. I think Tarzan's dumb. He does not interest me at all. And
yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you.
Sorry, Tarzan.
Yeah, there's a lot of Tarzan fans in our audience. No, but I agree.
Oh, yeah. Huge. Yeah, you know who likes Tarzan? My dad. You know who else? Nobody. you had said to me, you said, that's the introduction to your book right there, is what's the difference between Tarzan and Batman. So to me, a superhero, it's not just about the powers. Does this character don a costume? Does he need to maintain a secret identity for some kind of reason? Because these are characteristics of a superhero, right? If you want to say that it's simply whether or not they have superpowers, then Batman's out, right? And if you ask me, Batman's the greatest superhero of them all. Right. So, you know, from my perspective, I have to justify Batman, right? I've got to argue the case in favor of him. Well, Batman wears a costume. You know, Batman has an identity to protect. Tarzan just wears, you know, like whatever fell off a cheetah, he wraps it around his groin and goes swinging.
Yeah, just a loincloth and maybe a cod piece occasionally.
So where do you stand on this one?
Yeah, I had a difficult time in answering that. Because it really, we were talking about supervillains, you know, and I could make the distinction pretty easily when it comes to superheroes that, I guess the same holds then true for supervillains. But for me, Batman, again, one of the greatest superheroes of all time. And I think he's the – is it right to use the term – you know, he's the perfect superhero archetype.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be hard-pressed to argue against that. I mean, he dons a cowl. He's not seeking vengeance necessarily, but justice. He's serving the larger good. But he does have superhuman powers in that he is the world's greatest detective. He sees things that the police department never does. He even comes out in the Dark Knight when he says, "Can I just have a few minutes here to look at this crime scene before your detectives contaminate the scene?"
Mm-hmm.
And she freaks out, right? She's like, "Contaminate." So I can make the argument pretty easily on the superhero side. I just was having a little bit more difficulty when you looked at the likes of the Kingpin, right? Mm-hmm. He's like a mob boss, basically.
Sure. I don't know that he's a supervillain so much as he's, you know, a mobster.
And then, but Lex Luthor, right? I mean, he's the greatest villains of all time in comic books. He's, you know, he's Superman's arch nemesis. Yes, he has no powers, but he's been a thorn in the side of Superman almost the entire run of the comic books. Well,
but at different times, I mean, he's had powers, you know, like he built that armor that gave him super strength for a while.
Yeah.
You know, he's gone through various incarnations and stuff.
Right. But is it just because he's a mastermind that makes him a supervillain? Like, what's the difference between him and Rocket Racer? Right. Would you consider him a supervillain when one of Amazing Spider-Man villain from the late or mid early 70s?
You talking about the guy with the red and yellow costume?
Yeah. Or the big wheel from, I'm telling you, things some early Amazing Spider-Man villains. Rocket Racer being this guy. He was, you know, they tried to influence. They had more like, try to get more of like an urban audience in Spider-Man. So, you know, they had this guy wearing like roller skates and he would rob people. And it was like rocket roller skates. So he'd zip up the side of buildings. And it was ridiculous, you know.
He became a good guy eventually.
Eventually, which is like, yeah.
So but you remember that, like some of those, they turned him later. You remember Night Prowler or whatever? Maybe he was just called the Prowler. He wore like a ridiculous purple and green costume, all Spider-Man villains did for a while.
Right.
When purple and green was all like the villain seamstress had. It's like, sorry, Green Goblin, you get purple and green. Oh, what's that, Scorpion? Yeah, green for you.
Oh, you don't have Paisley?
Green, Scorpion. Green.
I wanted some Paisley. Vulture?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, green. Yeah.
Right. Electro, I think it's just going to be green. Ooh, I got a little yellow here for you, Electro.
Vulture, I do have some fur left over from the Puma's costume. You want to borrow some of this?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have these weird distinctions, right, where a guy gets in like a large automobile that's like crushing things. Is he a supervillain or is he just like a B-level villain? You know, what is a supervillain? Is Lex Luthor a supervillain, and yet he has no powers? I mean, I would make the argument that he is, right? He's a mastermind. He's the guy, mm-hmm. he's like Batman, right? He's mm-hmm. the guy you want leading the show, like the Legion of Doom. Like, you want Lex Luthor behind the scenes calling the shots, right? Because he's mm-hmm. the guy that's going to come up with the master plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he might not be out there throwing the punches. And I mean, look at the Joker, another example, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just got to a great part in Arkham City where he's got all these thugs. You know, the Joker's finally tracked down the Joker in this scene. And, of course, you're, like, fighting him. And, of course, he's, like, dancing around and, like, he's like, no, don't hit me, don't hit me. And then he's like, but I've got some friends for you. And then suddenly the gates open, like these giant, like, you know, Bane-filled thugs come out to fight you, you know. Mm-hmm. And the Joker's kind of, like, dancing around, still punching you the whole time. He's like a mosquito and you can't get him away, you know. He gets his butt kicked, right? Mm-hmm. But he's like a criminal psychopath. And he's a supervillain, I would argue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but then...
No, I'm with you on that one.
It's trouble. Is there a gray area, I guess is what I'm asking. Because it'd be easier to delineate then. If we say there's a gray area, then who falls into that gray area?
Well, superheroes and supervillains, I think... It comes down to that. How are you going to define them, and then who kind of gets stuck? Like, Indiana Jones, that's not a superhero to me, right?
Right.
Like, just because he has, like, one outfit that he wears through all his movies, I don't see that as a costume, you know? So if you're going to say, well, a superhero needs to have superpowers, he needs to have a costume or otherwise protect his identity for some reason, like, Indiana Jones doesn't qualify. Was this guy trying to make the case for Indiana Jones?
No. He was just simply throwing that out there, I think, in some – I wasn't there. My wife and son were there when they arrived at the airport, and they were just having a discussion about superheroes because my son was wearing a Superman shirt with a cape when he came to greet me at the airport the other day.
Mm.
And so he has a cursory knowledge of superhero stuff, so he's asking a question, you know, is a guy like Indiana Jones a superhero? Mm. And so this is what prompted the whole conversation. I don't think he was arguing in favor of it. I think he was throwing it out there as a question. Yeah, I would not, and I was certainly. I don't think that Indiana Jones is a superhero either.
Mm-hmm.
But there are those gray area characters that you sort of wonder if they fit the mold. I mean, even if you're labeled a mutant, right? Like Cypher of the New Mutants,
a favorite of ours.
Yeah, to discuss here on the show. Sure, he's a mutant, but does that make him a superhero? Right? Would you argue though the Cannonball of the New Mutants was a superhero because he could, you know, light on fire and rocket through the sky? And help people, perhaps. But then is Cypher, who is a mutant, and he's part of the New Mutants, but he can only speak all kinds of languages. That's his only skill.
Right. This would be an interesting one. Like, does a superhero have to be someone that uses their powers for the good of others? You know? Like, do they serve the greater good? Because I'd be really interested to know if Cypher ever helped anyone.
Right. He helped somebody with his homework.
Like, who was in trouble, and that guy came to help?
He helped.
You know, like, you're in a burning building. Like, oh, thank God. Oh, it's Cypher.
Cypher showed up. Oh, I was just walking by and I was going to go help little Billy in 4C with his Spanish homework.
Mm.
He can't speak other languages. I'm just here to help him.
Right. He's like a super tutor.
Right.
Yeah, he's not really a superhero.
Do you know, incidentally,
I don't know this bit of trivia. Who created the New Mutants for Marvel? Do you know who that was?
I don't know.
Like, do you remember who, like, the definitive writer of the New Mutants was? I have no recollection of this. You were a bigger New Mutants fan than I.
If I saw a cover, let me look up a cover here. I don't know if it one of the if he stayed around for the longest run. I do remember some of the art though. By was it McLeod?
Mm.
Hmm.
Wow. The only McLeod I know is Scott McLeod.
Nice.
And I couldn't tell you for sure, but it'd be interesting to talk to the people who created those characters. Like, what did you really, you know? How did you really see them? Maybe they gave it no real thought whatsoever. You know, like being able to classify their creations was of no interest to them.
Chris Claremont?
I didn't really care if I was making a true superhero or not. Like, they were making kind of an interesting, diverse group. Like Jubilee, I kind of feel that way about too, right? Like she makes light effects.
It was originally written by Chris Claremont.
Mm, I should have guessed that. Yeah, it's always a good guess when it comes to the mutants.
Yeah, I knew we'd recognize the name.
Dazzler.
I was right. McLeod, Bob McLeod.
Oh, Bob McLeod.
Okay. Handled the artwork, and then he handed it off McLeod handed it off to Sal Buscemi, mm-hmm. Buscema.
Sal Buscema, or whatever his name is one of my least favorite Marvel people ever. Like, he's up there with Al Milgram and Ron Frenz. Do you remember him? He did Thor for a while.
Right.
Like, those were those guys where you knew, like, they had won a bet with an editor, and they're like, all right, you can keep doing art. And, you know, the fans were like, Al Milgram's, like, the worst artist ever. But, like, maybe he was that guy where on Fridays there was an interesting story I just heard about Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. And it was this, that, like, sometimes, like, the art for a book wouldn't come in at the end of the day. You know, it's the end of the week, it's Friday, and the guys are going home. And Stan Lee would say to Jack, like, we need this book by Monday morning. So you're going to have to go home and do, like, all 22 pages by yourself. And Jack Kirby, you know, he was the king. Like, he'd go home, crank them out, come in Monday morning, all 22 pages would be done, which is insane. You know?
That's crazy.
Like, you just got to figure, like, there must have been Friday. It was deadline. The book didn't come in. And they're like, is Al Milgram busy? Like, maybe he was one of those dudes who's like, I can do 70 pages over the weekend, guys. I just won't sleep. Please give me West Coast Avengers. And then, of course, I'd go down to Ronco's Pharmacy and flip it open. Be like, oh, God, it's Al Milgram again.
And Louise Simonson ended up picking the run of the she picked up the run of the series in 1987.
And later, you know, she did X-Factor. Her run on X-Factor with her husband, Walt Simonson, is my favorite run on that book. And that's one of my very favorite comics of all time.
So we can thank Louise Simonson for writing Magma out of the series and also killing off Cypher. Thank you, Louise. Well, you
know, she's also the one that wrote that story where the angel got killed. Mm. But Cypher came back, you remember? They brought him back and he merged with Warlock.
Right.
You remember that? He became Douglock.
You know what's weird is that, so, you know, Bob Liefeld took over the drawing and actually co-plotting. So he was actually part writer of it. And the series took a tumble after that. I didn't realize that was one of the reasons. It took a sharp turn. Oh, I'm sorry. What am I saying?
Are you talking about Bob Layton or are you talking about Rob Liefeld?
I'm talking about Rob Liefeld, but it took a sharp upturn. Sorry. When he took over, and that's
sure.
when
his art, you know, at the time it was very eye catching. I remember that's when I started reading New Mutants.
He was doing the covers. I was with it way before that, and then I know, and then that's when Cable came in, of course, and
he ushered in Cable and Domino, and then it eventually, you know, led to the X-Force.
X-Force,
that was like Liefeld's project.
They ended with issue 100, were the New Mutants. So I wouldn't mind going back and reading some of that.
Yeah, I have very few of those. Like, those early ones where they all wore the matching uniforms and stuff, I really disliked that. Like, when Liefeld came on, like, they all had distinct costumes, and, you know, I preferred the series then. Now you look back at it and you're kind of like, I don't know that there's 74 muscle groups in the upper arm, Rob Liefeld.
Right.
You know? I think if that man was holding that gun, he'd probably tip over.
Well, let's pause here and thank our last show sponsor of the show, our good friends over at Cobra Electronics. And you know what? Just in a few short weeks, they're going to be rolling out the brand new iRadar, their second edition of it, really. And it's smaller. And what does it do? Well, it pairs with your smartphone. So whether you've got a BlackBerry, an Android phone, an iPhone, basically you download the free app from Cobra and you pair it over Bluetooth with your radar detector. And you can use it as a screen. You know, put it on your dashboard there. You can get one of those like suction cup things that hang down. It works great. Or you just keep it in your console by your cup holder. And it'll let you know all of those red light cameras as you're traveling through a city. And it'll be aware of every radar detector used by the police departments across the country. So if you're traveling across state lines, you know, let's say you're going from Delaware into Pennsylvania. They use maybe perhaps a different type of radar detector. It might switch from K alerts to KA alerts. It doesn't matter because they'll be totally up on it and you'll be fully aware of everything that's going on around you. It makes you a safer driver too. When you're out there driving along, it'll make you a safer driver. And the new iRadar actually has twice the range of the first one. So as you're coming around a corner, maybe a mile and a half away, there may be a speed trap up there. It may start letting you know right then that beep, 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 there's someone up there. You better watch out. You better slow down and just be more aware of your speed. Of course, you know, God, they have a whole range of products over there. You were even talking about, they have a new one. I was unaware that they even had this, which was, I'm sorry, forgive me for, I'm trying to remember this one. It was a unique thing that Cobra has, besides the Cobra tag. You mentioned it the other day.
Well, they've got, you know, apart from the radar and laser detectors, and, you know, they do CB radios, they do marine navigation and stuff, they have these portable jump starters that
That's
you can take with
was.
You.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is awesome. Like, I always think back to when I visited you in Montana, and,
right.
like, everyone would come out and try and start their truck in the morning, and, like, nobody could get, you know... it's the perfect remedy for stuff like that. But you can also just, like, you could power anything off of these things. And they come in different sizes. Like, I know this sounds ridiculous, but, like, let's say you wanted to take, like, your PS3 to the beach with you, like, and set up your TV and play video games on the beach. Like, you just power it off your portable Cobra jump starter, you know? Like, they just have an endless array of different and diverse innovations like that. And if you spend some time, you know, browsing around their site, you'll be really surprised by what you find. It's almost at times you're like, oh, man, I never really thought I would want that, but I really want it now.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is cool. And once you start using this stuff, you're like, oh, my God, I can't hit the road for that 2-hour road trip and not have my, you know, not have my iRadar in the car or the Vendetta. You got to check them out. They have a bigger one in the car, too. And it doesn't even use your smartphone, called the Vendetta. So go over and check them out. We couldn't do this show without them at Cobra.com. They have a whole range of products. You can pick up all their stuff over at Amazon and other places. And they're always running some great sales. Check them out and be a supporter. And hey, Father's Day, you know, coming up not too far away. Mother's Day, maybe a great time to pick up a little something. Or graduation, too. You know, kids are going to hit the road. They're going to be out there in the world. And you want to make sure that they're safe on the road. So check them out, Cobra.com. We appreciate their support of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe.
Indeed we do. Hey, speaking of going on the road, I'm going to be on the road. I'd love for you to come out and see me. I'm going to be live this weekend in the greater Boston area. I'm with Wrestling is Art. You can see me up in Haverhill, Massachusetts this Saturday. Sunday, I'm in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Next weekend, I'm with Wrestling is Fun in Allentown, Pennsylvania. The weekend thereafter, I'm with Wrestling is Awesome. That's going to be up in Rochester, New Hampshire. The weekend after that, Chikara comes to Florida for the first time ever. Catch me Friday, March the 8th in Tampa, Florida. We play the Orpheum there. And then on Saturday, March the 9th, we're in Orlando, Florida. Come and check us out at the Downtown Rec Center in Orlando. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to be out there traveling the highways and byways, something ferocious. Now, while, of course, Clayton has just returned from the other side of the globe, he and I are likely to team up sometime very soon because you and I are going to go and see Michael Nesmith live at Town Hall in New York.
Very excited about this. So I got that message from you while I was over in New Zealand that you'd picked up tickets for us. Thank you very much.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. I know we wouldn't normally talk about this on the podcast, but the tickets that I have for us are, we're seventh row center, right on the aisle. We got really good seats at Town Hall. However, someone I know, vague by intention, said that they could get us front row seats. But I'm going to say this. It's an exorbitant sum of money that they're asking. And if ever I was going to spend a ridiculous amount of money on something, it would probably be this. Would probably be this concert. But it's even like, it's more really than I have to spend. And I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are, because, you know, we were seventh row at the Monkees, right? Sixth or seventh.
Yeah, I think that's, to me, that's close enough. I don't know. To me, I don't know that you get, and then when you're first row like that,
right,
then, you know, you get some of the, you know, the security guard issue, you know, you get some of that rigmarole right up front like that. And then you're sort of like on the spot to be the guy that's like swaying in your seat uncomfortably during a song, right? Like Nez is going to look down at you and he wants to see that you're the one that's like swaying back and forth like a female in her 50s. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So
yeah,
I'm
I don't know how to sway like that.
I'm okay with being a little bit back in the seventh row. Because that, to me, that's close enough. As long as I can see their facial expressions and I'm going to have my camera with me. I'm going to take some great shots. I'll be really excited because I know we'll be a little closer. I'll be prepared more this time with a proper lens, the whole thing. So I don't know. I think seventh row is probably fine. And, well, I want to look at the floor plan of the place.
It is a really weird floor plan. I'm glad we're in the center because I can tell you, if you're off on some of the side sections, you're going to be looking at a really weird angle. So the tickets we've got are very, very good. And in order to sit front row, we'd spend six times what we're currently going to spend. Mm-hmm. So, I kind of feel like maybe we'll be content with where we are because I really did like where we watched the Monkees from. I thought they were good seats.
And I'll say this, too. If we hadn't seen the Monkees like 4 weeks ago,
It was longer than that. You know, that was like mid-November. It feels like it was only 4 weeks ago, but it was really like 3 months ago.
But if we, you know, if we hadn't seen them and this was going to be our only chance, then I might reconsider, right? But I still think that that's going to be fine, just based on our past experience with having seen them in the seventh row. I even think we were a little bit further back than that, weren't we?
No, I think it was like virtually exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It was just that we were off center. We were on the aisle, seventh row, but we were just off center. And this time we're on the aisle, but centered.
But more than just the seats, let's talk about this in a meta way. I mean, this is pretty incredible that he's actually doing this tour.
It is. It is. A couple facts I've learned about the tour. I think I was telling you, maybe not on the podcast, but he's not touring with that, as he was calling it, array of virtual instruments like his UK tour, which to me must have been like a visa issue, right? Like to get the five guys that are playing with him all to get visas to go over and play in the UK, it was probably just too much of a pain. It was easier to program the iPads and let them play. So he has a full band. He just added another guy, I think, who's playing keyboards. His longtime keyboardist, that guy John Hobbs, who drives you and I nuts, is not going to be on the tour. It's a different guy. Yeah, he plays other instruments too. The only one of like his recurring cast of characters that's on the road is Joe Chimay, who does bass and has sung backup with him as far back as Infinite Rider on the Big Dogma. So he did come out and say on his Facebook page, Nez said that there'll only be one Monkees song in the whole set. He said, you know, basically said, you know, I just played all my Monkees songs on the last tour, you know, referencing the Monkees tour that we just saw. So my guess is we're either going to hear Papa Jean's Blues, which is a longtime staple of his, or Tapioca Tundra, because, you know, he'd made a point of saying that he'd rehearsed that quite a bit. Right before his tour starts, it's about 15 dates. Already about half of them are sold out. I think you can only get tickets for 8 of them anymore. They sold out very, very rapidly. But they are smaller venues. You know, he was very forthright in saying that promoters don't have confidence in his ability to sell tickets, at his, you know, given how long he's been out of the mainstream. Right before this tour starts, he's going to be doing a special performance in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's just him and John Jorgensen. And you'll remember Jorgensen played with him at Live at the Brit. He's that guy who plays guitar, mandolin, and a variety of other instruments. And they're going to be playing all stuff from his solo catalog. But that's like a one-off. And Jorgensen's not part of the touring crew. So, also, as it relates to just Monkees news in general, Mickey Dolenz said they recorded professionally every night of the 2012 tour. And he fully expects they're going to release it.
As a CD or as a movie or a DVD?
He didn't say what they were going to release it as. But given how they were almost promoting people, putting out their own bootlegs of it, that really surprises me that they're going to do a commercial release. But I think that's great. I'd love to hear a professionally mixed version of that tour. That would be a really cool thing to have.
Indeed it would. So looking forward to that. A couple of other things that I wanted to, well, just were on the hot plate, so to speak. I was thinking, you know, you and I we can kick around an idea here publicly on the show, but something, you know, like we did with the Batman run of movies here, where we kind of discussed each one as we went along. Mm-hmm. Maybe doing that again with something else.
I thought you meant the Batman movies again.
Right. Yeah. Let's just redo those.
Yeah, it was just like a year ago, but let's do it again.
Well, I was thinking one of the ideas that I had was doing something maybe Star Trek related. That might be, you know, an idea I'm interested in doing. Going back and watching some of the early ones again as we build up to the release of the next Star Trek movie would, you know, seem kind of like a nice idea. That's one idea I had. Another was a round of really interesting documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a list published recently. I think it was it might have been what's his name? The famous movie critic. Why can't I think of his name? Roger Ebert published a list of like the, you know, best documentaries of all time. And there's a recent crop of them on there that I have not seen. And I was having a discussion about this in New Zealand about some great documentaries that I just have not seen, like Exit Through the Gift Shop. It's supposed to be excellent.
Right, I've heard of that.
And you know, there's a list of other ones on there. Some really good ones that I have not seen. I Dream of Sushi, about this like Japanese sushi chef who is like, he only has like 8 seats in his restaurant. It's the, like the most sought after sushi in the world. And to even to even begin to work in his place, he puts you through like a 2-year training period of like of how to roll the proper rice the right way and all of this stuff. Even his sons have not been able to take over the restaurant yet from him. So I don't know. There are a couple of great documentaries out there, including that David Grohl studio documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be fun to pick like a list of 5 or something like that and go through those. But also I was thinking this House of Cards is out, which just came out, this Netflix exclusive show. And I haven't started watching it yet, but everyone's been asking me if I've started watching it yet. You know, Netflix, of course, bid and won the rights to this House of Cards, starring Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright and so forth back in 2011. And what's so interesting about it is they're trying to beat HBO at its own game. So they bought this show and they committed to 2 full seasons of it before they shot anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know if the second season's going to suck. You don't know if the first season's going to suck.
Mm-hmm.
So it, of course, had such a high-profile release. David Fincher, of course, directing it. The cast is huge, of course. And you typically would spend this kind of money if you're HBO, but this is Netflix trying to do this. $100 million, I think they spent for House of Cards, like $3 million per episode. It's sort of this political thriller based on a BBC show that was a success. And, you know, so far I've been hearing great things about it. And, you know, the interesting thing is they released it all at once. They put it right, you know, like that's sort of the new tactic by Netflix of just putting it all out there right at once.
Mm-hmm.
So you can watch every episode back to back to back. And I thought that might be an option as well. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Any ideas?
Well, one thing I think will be fun to do, I don't know that we want to tackle it this summer, but, you know, given that Star Wars Episode 7 is now coming, it might be fun to go back and, you know, we talked a lot about how does, you know, the 3 prequel Star Wars kind of impact the way you enjoy the later ones and everything else. It might be interesting for us to actually tackle that job. As it relates to Star Wars news, you saw about the 2 extra Star Wars movies that they've announced as well, the ones that are going to come in between.
No, I didn't see it. What?
They are releasing 2 additional Star Wars films that are going to take place between the prequel trilogy, 1, 2, and 3, but before you get to Episode 4, A New Hope. And one will follow a young Han Solo, and one will follow Boba Fett. It covers the break between where Episode 3 ends and 4, the classic Star Wars, A New Hope, picks up.
Is this going to be the J.J. Abrams stuff?
Yes. Now, it won't be J.J. Abrams necessarily at the helm, but after they release Episode 7, they're saying before Episode 8 comes out are going to be these 2 solo films, the Han Solo and the Boba Fett film, that fill in the gap between Episodes 3 and 4.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah, that would be a good one.
There's going to be a lot of Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really want to watch that weird Christmas special.
Oh, yeah. So that would be fun. Yeah, and, you know, maybe even some of the Clone Wars stuff, because I know that...
I've never watched Clone Wars. That would be cool. I don't know. If there's like 100 episodes, maybe I'll rethink that. But
yeah, I know, because I know a lot of my friends, they have their kids watching it, you know, their sons. Like, that's their entree into some Star Wars, and their kids love it. They're obsessed with Clone Wars. So I was thinking, you know, my son knows nothing about Star Wars at all. And I was thinking, well, this might be a good starting point, maybe go into some of that. I don't know. I'm just curious if the movies at this age, you know, he's 2.5, if they would like hold his attention at all. Might need to start with the cartoon. I don't know. Or it might seem a little weird starting with the cartoon. Maybe go backwards. I don't know. Yeah, but to me, you know, Star Trek makes a lot of sense just because I'm a big Star Trek fan. But, you know, obviously leading up to the new one, which is supposed to be amazing, with starring Benedict Cumberbatch. There are a couple of other shows out there floating around that, like Arrested Development coming back to Netflix very soon.
That's May, right?
I think. Is it May? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
And, yeah, that's about all I can think of. But anyway, vote for us. Let us know if there's something you in particular would like us to discuss. Go to @GrizzlyBearCafe on Twitter. Drop the egg out of the title. Just @GrizzlyBearCafe. And let us know your thoughts about that.
Yes, let us know. Let us know. We like to hear from you. Well, we covered a lot of ground. I don't even know what we're going to talk about next week. Next week we should really talk a little bit more about New Zealand. I feel like you kind of blew that off.
Okay. Happy to. Yeah, I'm going to process some of these photos. By the way, I took over 3,000 photos.
And was your camera broken? Like it just took 3,000 and no. You took it out of the bag and you're like, ah, oh, I've got 2,900 photos of the inside of my bag.
No, but I did take a lot of them on purpose. Some not on purpose. You know, that's what you do when you're learning. So it was. I'll send you a few. You can critique them for me, but I'm going to process some of those and we'll talk more about that because there's a lot of interesting things over there, just culturally and you know, just the way that they do things and the things that they have access to and the things that they don't have access to, like Netflix, for instance, which is odd. Mm. So, yeah, we can talk more about that. We'll talk about some of your road tripping. As it relates to Chikara and other wrestling info next week. Anything else on the docket?
Not that I can think of, but I'm sure we'll come up with a world of stuff to chat about when we get back together here at the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, because that's where we get together.
That's right. Grab your Tonks coffee, everyone. And don't forget to enter, because you have one more week to enter to get your free Google Nexus 7 tablet that we're going to give away.
Mm. All right, that's going to do it. We're out of here. Bye-bye.
Bye.